Buckmaster guy. I think it's me. I know it's me. It's the Buckmaster Radio Show, and on the other side of the glass, I know who that is. It's Tom Fairbanks. Tom, how are you?
So far, so good. So you're not the ringmaster.
I'm the ringmaster.
And the Buckmaster.
I'm the Buckmaster, and I'm here to tell you that there are very little rain chances in our forecast for the next 10 days. And I'm telling you, it sure feels, this morning had a feel. Do I dare say, I had a friend who said
I'm getting that feeling too.
There was a nip in the air. Now, I won't go that far, but the change in season is really upon us here. It's the Buckmaster Show for over, 14 and a half years. We'll be into our 15th year with our radio program in January, and we are part of the Bustos Media team here. We've got 5 radio stations under one roof. The station you're listening to is 1030 KVOI, Tucson's Voice. You can live stream our program on my website, buckmastershow.com, where we have all of our, pretty much every show we have done since we launched in January of 2011 at buckmastershow.com. We have extensive archive of all of our podcasts. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. They have the naming rights to our show. I'm glad they do. They're a great organization. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. What say we go now on the live line to the chairwoman of the 5-member Pima County Board of Supervisors, Adelita Grijalva. Adelita, how are you?
I'm good, Bill. How are you?
Doing well. It's always nice to have you across from me here in studio. I can see your eyes, but it's the next best thing, putting you on the live line.
I do prefer being in studio as well.
I know.
Logistically was going to make it crazy today.
Yeah. Let me first ask how your father, Congressman Grijalva, is doing at this point.
He's doing well. Thank you for asking. People always asking, and I appreciate all the well wishes and prayers. They're working. His doctors are really happy. We're all really happy. Just needs to get a little bit stronger, and he's still working every day. Just not out in public as much because, you know, we need to make sure that he has the antibodies to protect him from all the germies that are out there right now.
Oh, yeah. There are a lot of germs. We'll certainly wish him our best, okay?
Thank you so much. Will do.
And speaking of germs, the COVID has reared its ugly head this summer. Some states like California have had the biggest summer surge in 4 years. We've had quite a few cases. We had Dr. Cullen on the show a couple of weeks ago, and she was talking about the new vaccine. I know I've scheduled my updated shot for a week from tomorrow. So the pharmacies are getting the vaccine in. And I know Dr. Cullen would like to see that low-income folks who really maybe are uninsured, that they would get vaccinated as well. So I know she's trying to work out some kind of a way that we can get lower-income people vaccinated, Adelita.
Yep, I know. I think it's so important. I know personally 5 people that have had COVID in the last week.
Wow.
There's also a really ugly flu strain going around. So a lot of people think it might be COVID, but then it turns out, you know, tests are negative. And and the lasting effects are difficult because, you know, you have that little cough or congestion that lasts much longer than, you know, the time that you're contagious. So people are not feeling great when they catch this bug.
Yeah, and I had that RSV shot last year, and certainly folks who are of a certain age, like myself, it is suggested you get the shot. And I looked it up. Apparently, one shot is sufficient. It's not like the flu shot where you have to go back every year to get a shot. So if you've had the RSV shot, you're in good shape. But You're right. Flu seems to be starting really early this year, and that those vaccines are now available, the updated version. But there's a lot of stuff going around, right?
It is, and it's the worst to have a cold during the summer. Because you can't really, it's difficult to get cozy under your blankets when it's 100 degrees outside.
Let's talk about the heat. The heat ordinance, the first ever, Pima County's first ever extreme heat plan. What does this entail, Adelita Grijalva?
Well, this is actually the first heat ordinance that any county has in Arizona. And so we are very proud of that work. And really what it is designed to do is to protect people. Either you're an employee of Pima County or you're a subcontractor with Pima County. We want you to take care of the people that are working outdoors, that are doing the good work of our community. And so make sure that they have more frequent breaks, that they have cold water, a place to sort of cool down. Just, you know, even shade makes a huge difference when you're out, and how to look for signs of heat exhaustion and heat related illness. Ideally, we'd like to keep people out from, you know, having to seek medical treatment or something that is preventable.
So Chris Mays, the attorney general, did look at this and kind of vetted it to try to help so that state lawmakers couldn't say, hey, you're overstepping your bounds here, correct?
Well, I think that she seemed very excited. Mm-hmm. I had an opportunity to speak with her, and after she sent her communication to us saying, hey, good work, Pima County. Here's a couple of things I'd like to see to strengthen the ordinance, which we appreciated. And I didn't think to put it on her radar. I wish I would have done that, but her team is really on it. And so they sent us some suggestions that we incorporated into the final approved document. And, you know, I think absent state direction and federal direction, you know, she's hoping that other counties will also adopt this to make, and it ideally would roll out statewide.
What are there penalties for those businesses that don't adhere to the ordinance?
I mean, really what we're trying to do is say, if you want to do any business in Pima County, or if you're an employee of Pima County, we want to make sure that you're protected. So perhaps the penalty might be you won't get that contract again next year. But really the goal is to just highlight for people that it's getting warmer. I mean, there's no denying that we have more 100-degree days now than we did 5 years ago and 10 years ago, and the heat is intense. And so how do we protect people, you know, creating flexible schedules so people can come in to work early, leave during the middle of the day, come back at night, make sure that we provide as much as possible, you know, all of the clothing, hats, all of the things that are important to keep people safe. That's the goal. I mean, I think really we talked so much less about being punitive and more about an education and that kind of rollout.
We've been talking here on this program for a couple of weeks now about the possible closure of some libraries, and it's just like all of a sudden some of the other media finally have jumped on the story. But even a couple of weeks ago, we had one of your colleagues, Rex Scott, on the show, and we had a caller from a library district board member, and we were talking about these possible cuts. So what do you know about all of this? I know that Amber Mathewson, the director of the county library system, has put out a memo with these proposed changes. What can you tell us?
Well, one, the document that's floating around very clearly says draft. And so that's the biggest takeaway, that these are proposed changes. And because District 5 has the largest number of libraries, we also have the largest impact to what might happen, including closure of some smaller branches or reimagining what those branches would look like. And, you know, I'm the daughter, wife, and sister of librarians. I'm a strong advocate for the libraries and understand their role in our community. And also when you look at the greater picture, I think the reason why District 5 has the most libraries is because we have a large percentage of our community that needs the services. And so when you have absent libraries, absent like certified librarians in our schools. Our libraries play a really critical role, especially in our Sunnyside and Tucson Unified District. So I want to make sure that our community understands what those changes are, what the impact could be, positive and negative, to the rest of the system, and get a little more data as to, you know, what those changes might look like.
There are 27 library locations, and there's talk about the Joel D. Valdez Main Library downsizing for some renovations in December. There's also talk of closing the Dewhurst Catalina Library branch at the end of this year. Also closing Santa Rosa Library again at the end of this year. Temporarily closing the Southwest Library, which was once the Richard Elias Mission Library, once that reopens in the fall of 2025. What's the purpose of this reorganization? Is it a staffing issue, Adelita?
I think it's a staffing issue and resources. Some of these branches require a lot of renovation and have a lot of underutilized space, which is, I think, what they're talking about with the main library. Southwest Library is out there in the far southwest side. And so what they're suggesting is that there are no changes to that facility until the Mission Library reopens after its renovation. And then that Southwest Library would close so they can create a new library that better can meet the needs of the community out there, because that's a really growing space. El Pueblo, the Frank de la Cruz Library at El Pueblo, the proposal is for that to change more into a community resource hub, and then Santa Rosa would be closed, and some of the hours are being cut down. I just feel like, you know, there has been less of a focus on trying to fill all of the vacancies that we have, because we have a significant number in the library system. And I think it's a combination of outreach, working with the U of A to see if they can, you know, really encourage more people to get into libraries, and, you know, being a communication expert, which is what our libraries have. You know, I think the constituents that come in, the patrons that are coming into the library, are coming in for a variety of reasons. Some are coming in for the needs that the libraries have always met. Others are coming in for cooling stations. A lot of people using computers that, you know, they just don't have access to at home. Maybe they don't have internet. And so trying to really do an assessment of what are the services that are necessary to these branches. You know, they're talked a lot about reduced gate counts. Well, I would like to see the gate counts comparatively throughout the system to see if it really is a change in these libraries, or if it's a change in overall in the entire system. I just think it's important for us to have a better idea of what we're talking about, and also have an opportunity to hear from the constituents at each of these spaces. And so my recommendation would be similar to what we did in Tucson Unified when we were thinking about closing a school, doing, you know, a public outreach and going out to that site, having an open dialogue and having the opportunity to hear from patrons that are going to be directly impacted. I don't know, that's something that we've done in Pima County, but that's something that I'm going to be advocating we do in this case.
Yeah, and I think they are moving in that direction. The library system's working to craft some kind of a survey that would let the public decide, well, what are you looking for in your public library system? And again, as you pointed out, this is a draft proposal, which next up will be discussed at the Library Advisory Board meeting Thursday, September 5th. But ultimately, it will be the public and you and your colleagues on the board that will decide, correct?
Correct. Yeah, and all of these deadlines, you know, closer by the end of this calendar year, all those are subject to board approval. And so as much as I was, you know, initially concerned when I started hearing rumors about the impacts, I also think it's important for all of us to listen to people that are working in those systems. How is it that, you know, what would the closure mean on one side for utilization at other branches? I just think it's important that we have a good grasp on it because, you know, that Frank de la Cruz Library at El Pueblo is, my mom worked there. Frank de la Cruz is my Nino and so godfather. And, you know, it means a lot to our community. It's a hub of our community. And so any changes there are things that I'm going to be very interested in and will definitely have input on.
All right. Stick around, Adelita. We've got another rather short segment with you, but still some important information to cover. We'll take a break right here. It is the Buckmaster Show for Thursday. Take a break and then back with the chairwoman of the Pima County Board of Supervisors, Adelita Grijalva. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Quality of Life Medical Center has served Tucson residents for more than 20 years. We understand the key to a long, healthy life is not just about getting the right medical treatment, but it's also about feeling good mentally and emotionally. Whether you're looking for preventative care or treatment for a specific condition, we're here for you. And we are accepting new patients for primary care, pain management, and sexual health. Please visit QLMC.com to request an appointment. Quality of Life. Our name says it all.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, a Thursday edition, as we quickly wind down the month of August and transition here into September with Labor Day here already. Can't believe it. All right. With us on our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, Adelita Grijalva, the chairwoman of the Pima County Board of Supervisors. The last time we had Adelita on the show, it was primary election day in late July. How did the primary go? What did you hear from the elections people, Adelita?
We had almost a 22% turnout or people voting, of eligible voters, registered voters. So that's a pretty low turnout. From what I heard, all of the vote centers went really well, no real major issues. And as a reminder, these vote centers, you don't have to live in the area. If it's the one closest to you, you can walk in, drop off your ballot, or go in and vote on election day. We're encouraging people to continue to, you know, sign up for the permanent early voting list so you can get your ballot at home. I used to be an election day voter before COVID, and the convenience is just great. And so the vast majority of voters voted early and through, you know, the PEVEL. We had some nice surprises, some contested primaries, and, you know, we're looking forward to the general.
Yeah, and early voting will begin actually pretty soon, won't it?
It will. We have, what, 5 weekends until our ballots are mailed out. And so ballots are mailed out on October 6th, so people can start looking for that really soon.
I noticed that I think it was your last board meeting, the vote was 4-1, $1 million, which doesn't sound, I guess, like a lot of money, but it's important in something called gap funding for 72 units of apartment housing that's actually located in the city of Tucson. How does the county and the city work together on trying to help people out on this apartment housing?
You know, we've been working really well together, especially as it relates to housing and a lot of the other outreach to keep our community safe. And the biggest issue is that that specific property was for seniors. And so I think that that is a critical need that we don't have a lot of vacancy for and capacity for. And so that's why I voted in favor of that project. I think the gap funding is $5 million that I advocated be added to the budget a couple years ago, and it just continues to be a critical need and something that I'm glad that we were able to fill, because nonprofits and other organizations and some for-profits are putting in requests for funding in order to get some of these projects going.
So it is the city and county really are collaborating in this regard, correct?
Well, in this case, it is in the city, but it's, you know, it's county funding that's going into it. But yes, we are trying to work together. We have Mari Vasquez, who's an employee half-time at the city of Tucson and half-time at Pima County, who's working as a liaison to try to help us sort of understand what the two governments in our region are doing together. And then I meet with our mayor, Regina Romero, and the city manager and county administrator, John Lesher. We meet 2 times a month. And so minimally, we're trying to make sure that we stay in communication and keep our relationship good for the betterment of our region.
Looks like there is some kind of a compromise being worked out as far as moving forward with a regional transportation authority reauthorization, or at least putting to the voters something called RTA Next as the current program gets ready to expire here in about a year and a half. What are some of your thoughts on that?
I think the biggest holdup was making sure that there was equitable distribution of funds, depending on where those are collected by, you know, whether you live in the city or unincorporated Pima County, Marana. I mean, and part of the issue, especially with the city of Tucson, is that they didn't feel like they were getting that sort of equitable distribution. And so I think it's important that we all look at this and what the impact is going to be regionally and understand that if the city of Tucson is able to improve on their arterial roads that we all use, it helps our entire community. So it doesn't matter if we, you know, have beautiful roads in unincorporated Pima County when all of our visitors coming from the airport are right in the heart of the city of Tucson, and, you know, we hear about all those potholes. We can't separate those out. It's reflected in our entire region.
And I think that will be a very attractive sales pitch to the people who live in the city of Tucson to try to get some of these main roads, get them, let's face it, there's potholes and deterioration. They need to be fixed.
Absolutely. They do. And roads are a big issue. And so we can't continue to say, well, you know, the infrastructure in unincorporated Pima County looks great. Well, the constituents in my district, in District 5, are also City of Tucson taxpayers. So they deserve the services just like everybody else does.
Any quick comment on the Congressman Juan Ciscomani asking the feds to investigate Catholic Community Services' use of federal funding to assist asylum seekers, specifically Casas Alitas, in that dust up over the unauthorized, I guess, billing, improper billing for laundry services?
Well, one, we don't know if it was improper. If he wants to look it up and look into it, I mean, obviously that's his right as a representative, but I truly don't think that this is something that he would be requesting if it wasn't an election year. You know, just to be blunt about it, it is a fraction. It is a fraction of 1% of the entire budget of all of the other federal dollars that Pima County and Drew Casa Alitas has been able to implement. We don't, you know, if you look at the kind of service that was asked for and promised to people that are coming in, sometimes people are wearing these clothes for several weeks. And so they take off those dirty clothes, put them in a bag, are given new clothes to wear. That bag is then taken, laundered, brought back to the individual before they leave Casa Alitas. And sometimes that is, you know, a 24 to 48 hour period. Many of the clothing has been worn, you know, for several weeks. And so, yeah, that's sort of the issue.
Okay. Adelita Grijalva, hope you have a great Labor Day. Thank you.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Taking a day off tomorrow, a little extending my 3-day weekend to make it 4. So my buddy Dan Scheer will be here, the editor from the Green Valley News, and Saharita Sun will be hosting the Buckmaster Show tomorrow. This portion of our program presented by our friends over at Green Things. Green Things and their sister business, Zocalo Village. They've been very busy over at Green Things, 3384 East River Road. The storms this summer, some areas of town, specifically that storm up on the northwest side with the hail and the wind, took out a lot of people's gardens. So, time to replenish. Go by Green Things, the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, 3384 East River Road, and their 13-acre site includes Zocalo Village, all of that beautiful merchandise, much of it imported from Mexico, some great pottery, their Talavera pottery collection, terrific. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com. When we do our telephone interviews, the live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Natalie Shep joins me now in studio. Natalie is Climate and Community Engagement Manager for the Pima County Department of Environmental Quality. Hey, Natalie, how are you?
I'm good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Doing well. Thank you for asking. I'm glad to bring you in because it's been a while here on the program that we've talked about air quality in Pima County. Generally, what is the role of the Pima County Department of Environmental Quality?
So we are the air quality control district for Pima County. So we are a regulatory agency, and our role is to monitor the air quality. So we have 15 monitoring sites throughout Tucson, and the data that we collect at those monitoring sites can be accessed at any point in time in real time on airnow.gov. And that helps us determine whether or not we're in compliance with the standards set by the EPA and the Clean Air Act. The other role that we have is we permit facilities that are sources of air pollution. And then we also have a compliance and enforcement unit that makes sure that those sources of air pollution stay within their permit conditions. And that part of our department also responds to air quality complaints. And then we also have the section that I'm responsible for, which is outreach and education. We administer the Clean Air Program, which is a program designed to encourage people to drive less in order to reduce air pollution.
Mm-hmm. So we have the Pima Association of Governments, that they also have mm-hmm. a role in all of this air quality.
Yep.
It gets kind of confusing for the public. Who is really what jurisdiction, or how is it all? Who has the ultimate control over the air quality permitting in Pima County?
Yeah, so the PDEQ is the sole regulatory agency. So
okay.
As far as permitting and compliance, it is our department exclusively. The role that PAG has is they are the planning agency. So if we if we violate the air quality standards that are set out in the Clean Air Act, and we were deemed to be in non-attainment for any of the criteria air pollutants, then it would be upon PAG to develop plans that would outline the measures that we would take in order to get us back into compliance. And then our agencies would work closely together in order to do that. And PAG is very focused on the transportation side of mm-hmm. air quality planning as well.
So have we been generally in compliance this calendar year in 2024?
Yes, we are. We have one area that we call the PM10 Rito non-attainment area. So there's one area that is what we call non-attainment. So that's been out of compliance for a number of years for PM10, which is particulate matter of 10 microns in size, and otherwise known as dust. So
yeah.
That's an area up in northern Pima County in the Marana area, and that's non-attainment. All the other areas are considered in attainment, but we do have exceedances of the standard that don't necessarily tip us into that non-attainment category, and that is often with ozone, ground-level ozone. So this summer we have had a number of exceedances at some of our monitors for ground-level ozone, unfortunately.
So we hear ozone I think there's confusion over what it is. We don't really see it, do we?
We don't. It is invisible.
I mean, the dust, okay, that's a no-brainer. We see that. But when we hear about ozone and being out of compliance, we're confused.
It's complicated. Ozone itself is invisible. It's made up of, it's created through a reaction that is from oxides of nitrogen, which is not invisible. So you can, when you see a yellowish hue, smog, that's oxides of nitrogen that you're seeing, which is also an air pollutant, but not a huge problem in and of itself. And then the other pollutants are the volatile organic compounds. Those are the things that we smell, whether that be paints and solvents or gasoline, even the what we're smelling from plants or VOCs. When oxides of nitrogen and VOCs mix in the presence of sunlight, that's what cooks into ozone, basically. And ground level ozone is something that we really only have a problem with in the summertime because of the long daylight hours and the intense
And we've sunlight. Had a problem with it this summer.
This summer we've had quite a few days where we've put out alerts so people can sign up to get alerts on our ozone action days. And we've had to put out alerts on quite a few days this year for that. And a few of those days we did exceed the standard.
So if folks are experiencing perhaps eyes are burning or maybe headachy, that could be the result of ozone.
Absolutely. Yeah, and for those who are
asthmatic. Because there's some mornings, I'll tell you, that feels like, I'll put eye drops in and my eyes are still kind of burning.
That would be, that you would feel that. You can feel your throat burning. And then asthmatics are often very susceptible to ground level ozone as well. So when we have these days, we put out those alerts or you look at the data that you can see online and you see that it's creeping into that yellow range from the green range, then we just recommend that you try to stay indoors and limit your driving so that you're not contributing more to the problem.
But big picture-wise with ozone, compared to maybe some other summers, this one's been a little more problematic.
Is it that has kind been of a bit more problematic, yes.
Do we know why? Is there some reason with it? We've had a lot of wind. I don't know.
Wind can be helpful because of the cooking and kind of how it works. So there's so many elements to it. There's a geographic element. There's a meteorological element. There's an emissions element to it. So there's lots of different reasons. It is possible that the warming temperatures are contributing more. We don't have any sort of evidence to prove that. It's anecdotal, but it's possible that these higher temperatures are maybe creating more of those volatile organic compounds, which are then creating more ozone.
So you mentioned there are 15 monitoring stations right now. Is that what you said? Okay. And this would be extended to some of the schools. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So we received grant funding from the Environmental Protection Agency and we're working with the University of Arizona College of Public Health to purchase 20 air quality sensors. These are low cost sensors, but they are capable of picking up all the different criteria pollutants that we monitor for. And we're going to be, we've already started installing those at schools throughout Pima County at 7 different districts. We are going to make the data of it publicly available so people will be able to see more data that's at more of a neighborhood level. And eventually what we're going to be doing is working with the students at the high schools and working with them to teach them about air pollution, about the equipment, about analyzing the data. And then there's a linkage on this grant into environmental justice issues. So if we see a disparity in the different sensors throughout Pima County, we can then work with the students to try to determine what types of environmental justice issues might be involved with contributing to that. But we really don't know until we start collecting that data.
That could be up and running soon?
Very soon. We've already installed some of them at the schools. The website isn't up yet, but it will be up very soon.
What is Pima Can? I know that's one of your programs, your climate plan. What's that about?
So just last summer, Pima County Department of Environmental Quality received $1 million grant. This is coming from the Inflation Reduction Act called the Climate Pollution Reduction Grant. This is our first foray into climate change. As a regulatory agency, there wasn't any role that we played previous to this in climate change and greenhouse gas emissions. Now we are tasked with this funding and with this program to put together regional climate pollution reduction plans. And we've already drafted a priority climate action plan that is on our website. You can go to pima.gov/climateplan to see it. And it outlines a series of priority measures. And we've worked with coalition partners, including the City of Tucson, Town of Oro Valley, the Tohono O'odham Nation, and the City of South Tucson. We worked collectively to come up with these priority measures, quantify the impact of those measures, and then make targets to try to achieve those. We also did apply for an implementation grant that was very large. Unfortunately, we did not receive that. No one in Arizona received that funding. So, but the planning grant will continue. We are now in year two of 4 years of this. And so our next step is to put together a comprehensive climate action plan and really try to figure out how are we going to reduce our emissions in order to align with the goals of the Paris Climate Accord.
All right. More with Natalie Shep after we take a break. Natalie, Climate and Community Engagement Manager with Pima County Department of Environmental Quality. A lot more to cover. Be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Quality of Life Research Center has conducted more than 100 clinical trials in Arizona over its 20-year history. Because of their success, participants may have access to a variety of treatments under study that may not be available to people outside the trial. And participants may receive compensation for study-related time and travel. If you think you'd like to participate in a clinical trial, please visit qlmc.com to view our open trials and express interest.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Perfect time of year over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. We have sent a lot of listeners over there, especially in the summer. It's a good place to cool off. Temperatures are going to be about, probably at least 10 degrees cooler because of their elevation being about 5,000 to 7,000 feet. And it's a perfect time of year. The change in season is happening. The southwest corner of the Land of Enchantment, that's what we're talking about, and it's only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson. So maybe this weekend. A lot going on in Silver City. I think they've got the Blues Festival coming up. But anyway, there's a lot going on over there. Check it out. Their website, southwestnewmexico.org. We continue now in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Our guest is Natalie Shep. Natalie is the Climate and Community Engagement Manager, Pima County Department of Environmental Quality. What are we doing, Natalie, to kind of improve the outreach to people, to kind of let them know that you guys are there and trying to help?
We have a variety of things, and actually we're really gearing up right now for a number of programs. Right now we have just launched registration for Walk and Roll to School Week. So schools are often a target. You know, you've got a lot of kids who, you know, you got transportation issues around school, people lining up and queuing, sure, all the idling happening. And we want to try to encourage people as the weather cools down to get those kids to be walking, biking, scootering to school, not just to reduce air pollution, which it will absolutely do, but to get them fit, community building.
For them.
Yes, exactly. So the registration is open right now. You can go to pima.gov/healthyair to register, and we're encouraging as many schools as can take it on to do it. We will provide supplies to the schools and incentive items, a grand prize scooter, and kids get a chance every day to win that grand prize when they walk and roll to school. In addition, we are really amping up our idle-free programs. We do have pretty significant issues still with idling in our region, and idling gets you 0 miles per gallon, mm-hmm, and it's putting out a lot of air pollution, and especially at schools. Mm-hmm. But we also have idle-free schools program as well as an idle-free business program. So if you're a business in Tucson and you want to try to improve your sustainability practices, you can adopt an idle-free policy. We will provide you with the signs as well as outreach materials to inform your customers about the importance of not idling and become an idle-free business.
The parents that pick the kids up in the car. Maybe they're in 15 minutes early and they're sitting there with the air conditioning.
We hear stories from schools that sometimes they come hours earlier.
Whoa.
And sit there. So that's terrible. And of course, you know, that when air pollution is one of those things, it dissipates rather quickly.
Sure.
So when you have all those vehicles in one location idling, spewing out that air pollution from their tailpipes in that small location, you really do get much higher concentrations. And those children are more susceptible to the impacts of air pollution. And so we really need to be thinking about that. Of course, you know, there's always climate control that's a concern, especially this time of year, but most of the school year, that's not an issue. And we ask people to just think about maybe going and parking in the shade and waiting for their children rather than sitting there right at the pickup and idling. And so we are encouraging schools to adopt the same kinds of policies. TUSD already has an idle-free policy. We're trying to work with TUSD to do more outreach and education to their families so they can understand that they have that policy and why they have it.
Then we have the lawn and garden element of the... a lot of pollution is put out by these blowers. I mean, collectively, it's a lot.
Yeah, not just blowers are definitely
blowers,
a problem.
Yeah,
but the reason we have this is called the Cut Down Pollution Program, and what people can do is turn in their gas powered lawn and garden equipment and get a voucher at Home Depot. So for a lawnmower, you can get a $150 voucher. Mm-hmm. Use that voucher for a plug in electric or manual lawnmower, and then you can get $50 for all the other gas powered equipment. And the reason is that those pieces of equipment, although they're not as numerous as cars, each one of them pollutes a lot more than a car. lot more. In fact, it's similar to like a VW bug from the 70s is what it's, because there's no catalytic converters. Mm-hmm. That's why when they're being used, you can smell them so much.
Oh, yeah.
So we really want to try to get those off the streets. They're big contributors to our ozone problem, not to mention the dust that's coming from leaf blowers. That's another problem we have. So we really want to try to encourage people to take advantage of our voucher program and try to transition those gas-powered lawn and garden equipment into electric or battery. And there's so many choices now with battery-powered lawn and garden equipment that I really think that unless you're doing really big jobs, I know some of the commercial users have some issues with some of the things that are offered, but the reality is that most people can get by with a battery-powered piece of equipment, and you don't have to try to start it. You don't get exposed yourself. So there's lots of good reasons to do that, and we're trying to incentivize it with this program.
Have some areas cut out wood-burning fireplaces?
Some areas have, but usually it would take something like a non-attainment designation to do that. Mm-hmm. So in Phoenix, there are certain times a year where they have no burn days, where they have worse air pollution. Mm-hmm. We don't have that here because we can't even legally do that until we get worse, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So, but wood-burning fireplaces in the winter can contribute quite a bit of air pollution, especially if we have an inversion, it kind of stays closer to the ground. So we try to encourage people, not necessarily to not burn a fireplace. We understand that people want to do that, but maybe try to get a, there's lots of choices for how you can burn, and you can get those efficient burning fireplaces that can really, really help.
We haven't talked about bicycling, and bicycling is not real attractive here in the summer heat. However, things are changing with the weather. Is bicycling still as popular as, I mean, what's the trend line on that?
From what we see, it's pretty stable. I wouldn't say it's decreasing or increasing all that much. We'd like to see it increase with the use of e-bikes. I mean, e-bikes make it, got an e-bike last Christmas, and I found that it just makes it so much easier to be able to use it for commuting purposes. Mm-hmm. A lot of people will use their bike for recreational purposes, which is great, but what we want to try to do is get people to get from point A to point B on a bike if possible. And the city is doing a great job trying to improve our bike lanes and make it safer, but we still have a long way to go, and we absolutely think that biking is a really good alternative if that's available to you.
The electronic buses or the, I mean, electric bicycles, do they have to be licensed at all?
No, they do not.
I wondered about that because you see them, some of them zipping along pretty good.
Yes. No, they're treated just like any other bike. Just have a battery that needs to be charged and can get people around a little easier than just the energy from the body.
So what is your message here as we transition now into fall with the ozone season? Hopefully it sort of wanes. Is that what
it does? Especially as the days get shorter, where the sunlight hours are shorter, we're already starting to see less of those days. But regardless, all during the year, I mean, most of the year we have fantastic weather. So we try to encourage people as much as possible to find those alternatives. And though the alternatives that we're encouraging outside of that single occupancy vehicle are walking if you can, biking. Remember, our transit is free. So we could be getting around by bus for free and save a lot of money on gas and maintenance. Even things like telecommuting and combining your errands, those types of things really do make a difference. And even how you drive can make a difference. The aggressive driving is going to burn that fuel a lot more than if you're taking that foot off the gas and easing into that red light. Just things like that. There's a lot we can do to make a big difference as long as we're all working together on it.
And your website for information about what kind of a day we're having pollution-wise?
If you want to get real-time air quality information, you can get it from our website, which is pima.gov/DEQ, or you can also get it directly from the EPA's website, which is airnow.gov, and there's also an AirNow app that I encourage people to download on their phone to get real-time air quality data. I would like to also mention, try not to get your air quality information from your weather app.
Okay.
That is not accurate. We do not know where that's coming from. So go right to AirNow instead of your weather app to get your air quality data.
Yeah, because on my iPhone, it's got the air quality, but kind of ignore that one.
It's got a lot of problems.
All right.
Yeah.
Natalie, great to see you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Natalie Shep with us from Climate and Community Engagement Manager. She is the Climate and Community Engagement Manager from Pima County Department of Environmental Quality. On behalf of Natalie and Tom on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing the show, Bill Buckmaster, wishing everybody well and hope everybody has a great Labor Day weekend.